Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets. My not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Glad to be back with you once again. You know, maybe we don't like to admit it, but we have all read an issue or two of the tabloids. You know the headlines. Girl gives birth to 52 UFO babies. Hillary Clinton having an affair with George W. Bush. The adventures of the incredible wrestling cheese, stuff like that in the National Enquirer, the Weekly World News, and other publications, stories about ghosts and goblins and weird events, celebrity scandals, political scuttlebutt, stories of questionable veracity, but which can't help but catch our eye as we stand there at the grocery store checkout line. Haven't you wondered about where they come up with this stuff? Do they simply make it all up? And if so, how do they get away with it? And while it might be easy to make fun of the tabloids, you know, I'm a journalist. I've been a journalist for 30 years or so. I think it gets tougher and tougher to tell them apart from mainstream media, which cover the same sort of sleaze and wackiness from, things like the water skiing squirrels to the sex lives of rock stars. This week, I've been reading an absolutely riveting book that provides an insider's view of the tabloid world. It's called Tabloid Man and the Baffling Chair of Death, which, sounds like a perfect tabloid-style title. It's written by a 30-year veteran of the tabloids, Paul Bannister. It is great fun, and I would think of great interest to Coast listeners, since many of the stories and issues we like to talk about here on this program may have started out as tabloid stories, not necessarily make-believe, though. The tabloids were, at one time or another, and it may be hard to believe this now, but at one time or another, they were relatively credible sources of information on, for example, the UFO topic. The Inquirer broke some pretty good UFO stories years ago that turned out to be true, that years later were picked up by mainstream news sources. These days, a lot of people suspect that the tabloids were sort of transformed or morphed into a propaganda arm of the CIA or other intelligence agencies to help debunk paranormal topics, by making them seem so ridiculous that other media would not want to cover them. They wouldn't want to touch anything that had appeared first in the Inquirer because they'd be laughed at by their media brethren. We'll get into all that tonight, starting less than an hour from now, with my guest Paul Bannister, and I'm really looking forward to this interview. Before that, though, we'll talk about some news stories of the day, then open up the phone lines in a couple of minutes to see what's on your mind tonight. To all of our listeners in the southeast part of the country, I really hope you're still standing out there and still have a roof over your heads. As CNN is reporting this evening, powerful storms that have ripped across the southeast killed as many as 45 people over the past 3 days, according to the National Weather Service and reports from several states. A CNN meteorologist called the storms epic. Among the worst hit places was Birdie County, North Carolina. More than 50 people were taken to hospitals in Greenville, and between 50 and 70 homes were destroyed. The death toll across six states includes 9 in other parts of North Carolina, 4 in Virginia, 7 in Alabama, 2 in Oklahoma, 7 in Arkansas, and 1 in Mississippi. The Federal Storm Prediction Center said it received reports of at least, and this is an astonishing number, at least 230 tornadoes across the region during the past 3 days, though some of those reports were likely sightings of the same twisters. Residents of Texas grappling with their own disaster tonight. Wildfires. The report from the AP out of Austin says strong winds and dry conditions presented more challenges Sunday for firefighters battling a spate of wildfires threatening communities across Texas, including a blaze in Austin that destroyed several homes and prompted an aerial water attack in the capital city. The wildfires that have ravaged more than 1,000 square miles of mostly rural terrain in the last week prompted Governor Rick Perry to ask President Obama to issue a disaster declaration that would allow affected areas to receive federal help. People in these states might have more on their mind than taxes, but don't forget tomorrow, that is Monday, April 18th, is the deadline for filing your taxes. CNNMoney.com is reporting that nearly half of U.S. households end up owing no federal income tax when all is said and done. Maybe that story should read, nearly half won't owe additional taxes, that is, mostly because you probably already paid in the form of paycheck deductions. One other not-so-cheery economic note. With the summer driving season just around the corner, look at what's happening with gas prices. With the average price of regular gasoline now hovering near $3.80 a gallon nationally, prices at the pump are nearly a dollar higher than they were a year ago. For the average American who drives about 15,000 miles a year and uses roughly 750 gallons of gas annually, that dollar increase per gallon eats about a $750 hole in the household budget per car. We've talked about the prospect for our energy future many times on Coast to Coast, and I know there is a body of evidence which suggests we can drill our way out of the energy scenario or the oil replenishes itself, but there is considerable evidence that we can't drill our way out, that we have passed the peak of the world oil supply, and that only gets more scarce and more expensive from here on out. Now, we're not going to run out tomorrow, but higher prices could become the norm, just as they have become in Europe for many years. On the Coast to Coast AM website tonight, webmaster Lex and I have posted some items of interest listed under Naps News. One story there looks at the oil supply from an insider's point of view. It's written by oil industry executives and how they see things playing out over the next decade or so as it relates to supply and demand and especially cost. I'm not saying you have to believe one point of view over the other, or that I have the answers or even a firm position on abiotic oil, but just that it doesn't hurt to peek under the curtain of the oil industry once in a while and see what they are saying is likely to happen. Other items posted there that I hope will be of interest to you. Two stories related to the CIA and its activities around the world. One from the LA Times. It's about how the role of the CIA in the interrogation of terror suspects has changed. Agency operatives have stepped back from their hands-on involvement in squeezing information out of terror suspects. All the attention given to the CIA kidnappings of suspects and alleged torture certainly has hurt the agency's image and may have contributed to the reduced involvement of those agents. Doesn't mean someone else isn't doing the interrogation, though. The other CIA story is about a brain drain at the agency, as our government has privatized many of the roles once performed by intelligence agencies or even the military, particularly in places like Afghanistan and the Middle East. A lot of CIA senior agents and managers have left the government for better pay and probably for less scrutiny of private employment. That story also a good read, posted on the website there. Ever thought you might want to live forever? I found a somewhat humorous but ultimately serious look at the quest for immortality of sorts, about how some people are having their brains frozen after death in hopes of being revived sometime in the future. Some scientists saying it's at least within the realm of the possible to bring us back after we're dead sometime down the line. And I wonder, what would you do if you could? I suppose it might be a function of cost for a lot of us, but if you could afford it, would you want to come back in 100 years or 1,000 years when everyone you know and love is dead and gone, and the world is a much different place? Might be something we can chat about when the phone lines are opened up. The title of the article, by the way, that we posted, "Hey Kids, Don't Forget to Take My Brain Out of the Freezer." Also on the website tonight, an interview with an Iranian scientist who claims he was involved in Iran's efforts to build a flying saucer-type craft. Plus an article that received almost zero attention in the mainstream media. It's about a scientist who thinks he's found a new form of life. I'm not talking about a new species of plant or a new kind of animal. I mean a whole new type of life, different from what the world now knows. Mind-boggling if you think about it. And since we're talking tabloid-type stories tonight, what's the deal with animal mutilations or mutilations, since most of them seem to involve cattle? More of those old FBI files have been released and shedding some light on what the agency and others in the government, all the way up to the White House, have been talking about, thinking about when it comes to animal mutilation cases dating back to the 70s. Don't ask me what the deal is with those. I've been chasing that particular mystery for more than 20 years. Still makes about as much sense now as it did back when I started. I have no idea why it's happening, but I'm pretty sure it's not the result of predators or coyotes with scalpels or satanic cults running around out there, Beelzebub worshipers carrying in rural pastures these laser machines. Not likely. especially since no one, in more than 10,000 cases, no one has ever been caught. Check out those articles on the site. When we come back, we open up the phone lines to talk about whatever is on your mind. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being with us tonight. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast AM. Coming up at the top of this hour, Confessions of a Tabloid Man. Paul Bannister has written a very funny, very insightful book about life in the tabloid paper industry. Great insight into how that whole thing works. And I think you're going to enjoy the interview starting at the top of the hour. Right now, we're going to the phone lines on the guest line, Blair in Sedona. Hi, Blair. How you doing? Hello?
Something that happened when we were talking last in September 2010 about me saying Americans don't want to know the truth. And we didn't have time to get into this, but I'd like to give an example of that, if that's okay.
Okay.
World War II, the Cold War, we had the tacit agreement by the American populace that people won't promise to ask the government what they're doing to protect us, and the government promises not to tell us in the name of security. The real don't ask, don't tell policy. So, for an example, if you look at chemtrails, you know, that's only been a 20-year phenomenon, and that would be something that people would really jump up and ask about, but they're thinking the government is protecting them, so we're not going to ask about that. And chemtrail phenomena is relegated to like a UFO story when it's actually in people's eyes. They can look straight up and take a look at it. You know what I mean, George?
Well, I do. I think the problem with chemtrails, and I've sort of talked about it before on the program, and I've done some news reports on it. I'm interested in that whole phenomena. I'm open-minded to it as being something that the government might pull. I just think the evidence is kind of weak. We do see something up there, but we proof that it's something filled with disease or chemicals or something that's doing us harm, I think, is pretty weak. I do. I agree with your general premise, though, about the government not telling us the real stuff. I'm not hearing Blair, so I'm going to move on. I'm sorry, Blair. I'm not hearing you. My headset. If you're still there, maybe you can call back. We're going to try a different line with Joe in Golden Valley, Arizona. Hi, Joe.
Hey, I was just wondering your views on the Zeitgeist movies, about how they talk about money and about how in this world mostly we use fractional reserve banking, which is basically where the federal government will say, okay, we need so much money, and they'll give them bonds for that money. And then they give us money, but that money is created out of nothing. It's like, so money is debt, basically. I don't know if you've watched any of these Zeitgeist movies.
Yeah, I have. I haven't seen all of them all the way through, but wow, that's really well produced. I mean, are you buying the general premise?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, they give you facts, and, you know, I mean, of course, everything can be, you know, skewed with what facts they want to show you, but they give a strong view of how the banking system it basically makes us into slaves, so like wage slaves, because they make money out of debt, basically, and that's what they're doing. So, like, if the government, you know, asks for $10 million, they give them bonds for $10 million. And then somewhere in the rules it says you have to the Federal Reserve has to have, like, 1% of that in the bank so they can, you know, pay off whatever it is. So then they'll make whatever's left over after they know they can, you know, pay that back. They'll use that to say – it's like – so when you get a loan, you put that money back in the bank. It's not, you know what I mean? And also what they say in the movie is if everyone paid off their debt, there would be no more money in the world because that's how they create more money.
Well, I can think of a lot of reasons to be ticked off at the banking industry, starting with, you know, the creation of the economic disaster that nearly threw the entire world into an economic collapse or a depression, something getting really close to it. Then you move on to the bailout and the manipulation of the political will of this country to just hand over $700-800 billion to these guys on the premise that they would go ahead and make it available to reinvest and stave off foreclosures and help the country get moving again. And of course, they didn't. They kept it. And then you get into all these the revelations about foreclosures. Every day brings new horror stories. I live here in Las Vegas, which is maybe the foreclosure capital of the country. We've got another wave that's coming. It's already been terrible here. About one out of every 10 homes it's been foreclosed on, another wave still to come, people kicked out of their homes, and the gamesmanship that's carried out by these banks. these greedy banks that don't, they want to hang on to every single dollar of that money that the country, the taxpayers, loan to them to keep them afloat. They won't loan it back out. They play games and hide paperwork and let people lose their homes. And then they resell them to their friends at cut rate prices, and the whole cycle starts all over again. I'm just so disgusted by the banking industry, and I'm sure that you and a lot of other people feel the same way. And it doesn't take the Zeitgeist movies to get us all fired up about it. There's a whole raft of really excellent documentaries that have been produced on different parts of the Wall Street crisis and how we got to this point. I'm sure you've seen them, haven't you, Joe?
Another interesting fact they point out in this, like I, one of the movies, is how Andrew Jackson paid off all the government debt, and it was the last time it was paid off. And then after that, they started like the Federal Reserve Bank. It's just, and if you look at all these quotes and stuff, it's, you know, basically, anytime you have debt, you're never going to have freedom, because you're always going to be working to pay off that debt.
Well, I can't disagree with you on that, and I advise everybody to try to limit their debt. Certainly, cut down on the credit cards, and because every dollar you give to these guys, they do something bad with it. It seems. Thanks for the call, Joe. I appreciate it. I think Blair and Sedona. Maybe we can hear them better this time. Blair, are you there?
Yeah. Thank you, George, for taking my call again.
Sure.
I get a positive way to look at it, though. I would think with all the secrecy is that there's a higher interest in the public. And this came from the time traveler fellow that George Nori interviewed, Passaggio, when he said, and instead of serving the cause of state secrecy, there's an overarching human interest that can be served and now needs to be served by the disclosure of life advantaging information. And at some point, sooner or later, we're going to have to look at that. Instead of all of this secrecy nonsense, it's all he builds up secret cabals and brings the dark forces in because nobody has any checks and balances anymore.
Well, I can't disagree with you. I mean, secrecy is something that I go up against pretty much every day. At every level of government, there are those who want to keep secrets. Most of the time, it's to protect their own butts, to protect their own little turf. And their jobs to thwart people who are in my business from trying to get information out to the public about how government operates, how our money is being spent. There are lots of reasons for secrecy. I think almost all of them are bad. There are some things that maybe the public doesn't have to know. As Stan Friedman has said many times in this program, we don't have to publish how to build a nuclear bomb. But short of that, I think the public pretty much has the right to know about basically about anything. I've seen it so many times in the UFO field, the kind of gamesmanship that's played with secrecy. I see it with the Freedom of Information Act and how it's administered. I mean, my gosh, what the transformation of our government over the last 20 years or so with in terms of secrecy. Every president comes in and promises to have the most open administration in history, and every one of them changes their mind as soon as they get in there. They all hate leaks. They all do what they can to stop leaks. They want to control the flow of information to the public. And I think it is incredibly unhealthy in a democracy to have the level of secrecy that we have now. So many things are classified. And once they're classified, they stay classified. They keep this stuff secret for 30, 40, 50 years, where there's no possible, plausible reason to keep it secret for so long. Would you agree?
Oh, you're exactly right. And I think a positive thing would be to look what Buckminster Fuller said about his critical mass of consciousness theory, where it doesn't need to be 50, 51% of the population to make great changes. 6 or 7% is all we need, as proven by the Continental Army under George Washington had the active support of only 7% of the colonists of that time. But we overthrew King George III. We developed a democratic republic. So if we think in those terms, I think from the inside out, we can change the consciousness, George.
I hope so. I know that my profession has been battered in recent years. I don't know how we ended up down in the pit with politicians and lawyers and used car salespeople. But, you know, a lot of people don't like the mainstream media. There are some good reasons for it. But basically, the job is to get information out of the government, to tell people how things operate, to shine light on government from the president and Congress on down and tell what they're doing with our money and what they're doing in our name. And a lot of times people get mad at the media. They would rather side with the people who are keeping the secrets. But I tell you, our system can't operate. It can't continue to operate with such high levels of secrecy, so many things being classified and gamesmanship being played by people who want to keep secrets. You look at the UFO field and the kind of excuses that have been used to keep secrecy there. On one hand, they'll say that that no UFO case has ever been a concern to national security. On the other hand, they use the excuse of national security to hide behind hide information about UFO incidents. Thanks to those callers. We'll go back to the phones in a moment, see what else is on your mind. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast AM. Spencer Davis Group taking us into the break. I want to send out greetings tonight to a new cluster of Coast to Coast listeners joining us from Madison, Wisconsin. This group started up by my own nephew, Huck, who is, thanks, Huck, for getting your coworkers to tune in. Never hurts to have a new beachhead in the media wars, the radio wars. So thanks for listening in. Coming up at the top of the hour, Paul Bannister, Confessions of a Tabloid Man. In the meantime, we go back to the phone lines to see what's on your mind right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Going back to the phone lines now to see what's on your minds out there in radio land. Wildcard line Kirby in central Montana. Hi, Kirby.
Hi, George. How are you tonight?
Okay. How's it going?
Good, good. I was an airline pilot for 25 years, and I flew towards the latter part of my career. I flew 757s and 767s, and their 757s had Rolls-Royce engines on them with triple spools and fans, you know, the great big fans up front that suck a lot of air in.
Right.
And I would do my walk arounds a lot, and I noticed that the fan blades were eroding very rapidly. So I contacted the executive vice president of my airline, which was Continental at that time, which is now a part of United. And he told me that the fan blades were eroding at 5 times the normal rate, and that they thought it was because of the particles that were being put into the upper atmosphere by the chemtrails. And I thought that was most interesting. I collected some samples and from the rear of the engines because they would look white, as though it was there was some kind of a chemical residue on the inside of the engines. But samples got mysteriously lost in the mail. So what can I say?
Well, that's the kind of evidence that we need in this, isn't it? I mean, like I said, I'm open to it. I just think that the evidence is pretty weak so far. But samples of exactly what you're talking about is exactly what's needed. I guess the people who are researching this don't have the resources to get a plane and go up there and capture something in a chemtrail as it's coming out the back of a plane. But what you're talking about is exactly what we need, that kind of evidence.
Well, I think so. Now, can I mention one other thing?
Sure.
I didn't tell a screener. Everybody needs to take a look at a website called poleshift.ning.com, poleshift.ning.com, and it may amaze them what they find. And also another interesting one is SERPO, SERPO.org, and that's probably as much as I should say.
Well, I think SERPO has been discussed on the program by yeah. George Norrie a couple of times. I'm not sure if Ian got into it or not, but that's a whole other interesting scenario. Let me ask you this: in your experience as a in the airline industry, should we not have people who've come forward to say that they're part of this thing, or is it being done without the knowledge of the people flying the planes?
It's being done without the knowledge of people flying the planes. They add computerized dispensers back in and tanks behind or back where the blue tanks are that store the sewage in the airplanes, and only certain people are allowed to access those particular parts of the airplane.
Well, I wish some of those people would come forward and tell us what they've been doing. And I'd ask you one final question, Kirby. I know you don't have definitive answers, but what is your guess about why, what they're doing, putting this stuff in the air?
Oh, I think that they're putting it in the air. It's reflective particles to because they were afraid of global warming, and also because they're trying to keep us from seeing the approach of Planet X, which I have seen over the jungles of the Amazon and in the middle of the night where there's no lights below, you could see it as it was coming in with field glasses. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that that's right.
Well, I mean, if you can see it with field glasses, do you think spraying this stuff in the air prevents people with telescopes from seeing it, from seeing Planet X?
I don't know. It's coming at us out of the sun. You know, like if you're a fighter pilot, you always want to come out of the sun at your enemies because the sun blinds you. It blinds people's eyes. And I don't know. I think it's just designed to keep the casual observers from noticing it at dawn and at dusk, which is when the Earth's gravity tends to bend the red light out of the way so that so you see two separate objects.
Oh, well, I hope you're wrong about that, Kirby, but I appreciate the phone call. Thank you very much.
I hope I'm wrong, too. God bless you.
All right, see ya. Jim in Shiloh, Illinois. Jim in Shiloh, Illinois on the wild card line. Hi, Jim. How you doing?
Hey. Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for taking my call, George. You know, George, I have been seeing a lot of these TV shows about the paranormal as it relates to ghosts and, on occasion, you know, buried topics. And I believe that the higher-ups, not just CIA, but Black Project Secret Space Program people are actually trying to program the televisions with these paranormal shows to definitely put people off track of what's going on. As a example, UFO Hunters was kind of axed, it seems like, not long after it ran a season or two. And I believe that these ghost shows are so popular because they are being pushed upon the public to sidetrack them from the UFO perspective. And here's another example. There used to be a lot of critics about UFO shows or UFO topics like Philip Glass. And you don't see any critics on these ghost shows.
No, and I don't think that they're held to the same standard as, say, a UFO show. The ghost shows are what they are, and they're presented as sort of fun. And I've seen a couple of them, and I don't know how many there are now. It seems like there's a whole bunch of them, but they go out and you see this grainy, greenish sort of video, and you can hear people reacting to ghosts, but you don't see a whole lot of ghosts. And I think it's just a lot to do with an entertainment function. I don't dispute your premise, though. It's one of the things we're going to talk about with Paul Bannister tonight, is whether government agencies or others have used different forms of media, in particular with him, the tabloids, to spread disinformation, to cast aspersions about paranormal-type topics, UFOs, ghosts, and things of that sort. I think it has happened over the years. There's an excellent book called The Missing Times by a guy named Terry Hansen, who looks at news media complicity in the UFO cover-up, how media have been infiltrated and manipulated over the years to put out a message the government wants so that some of these topics are not taken seriously. I'm not sure what happened to the ghost hunters. I know that the TV business is a tough business, and it's amazing that the show lasted 2 years, as tough as it is. But, you know, there was a heck of a lot of interest in that show. And, you know, but you look at TV and you wonder, how the heck does some of this stuff get on? I think there's like three different shows now about how to make cakes, right, on reality TV.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, one more thing, if I may. A lot of these shows that come on and do talk about UFO subjects, they use very little energy to try to recreate or understand the phenomena. And they don't spend any time on them. I predict in the future it'll be more popular to see a show that's 2 hours long rather than one because of all the commercials.
Well, I would say that the UFO topic has been mined pretty extensively by TV producers, that there are so many of these shows. There have been over the last 15, 20 years. And they have to go over the same material over and over again, always trying to find a new angle, but in general telling the same stories over and over. And you can only do that for so long and maintain the public's interest. Maybe that's the ultimate plan, is to make us all so bored with seeing the same stories over and over that we don't pay any attention to a UFO show. I know that. I think William Shatner is coming out with a new one as well. You know, there have been a heck of a lot of these shows, a heck of a lot of these programs, but it seems like they go over the same cases again and again. I know that I'm approached about once a month to give an interview about Area 51. I stopped doing it some years ago because there's really nothing new to say, you know?
Yes, and they do that, but the recent UFO stuff that comes up, they spend little or no time trying to understand them. So that just is a clue that they're really not trying to understand any of it, you know?
Well, thanks, Jim. Good food for thought. I appreciate your call. We're going to Bob in Miami, Florida. Good morning, Bob.
George, good morning. If I may go back to the chemtrail issue, I happen to be a chemtrail activist.
Sure.
And I actually met with my local EPA here at the University of Florida. And we showed them samples, both of rainwater and soil samples, that showed the higher elevations of strontium, barium, and aluminum oxide. In addition to that, Clifford Carnicon, along with a lady by the name of Rosalind Peterson, both former EPA officials, from what I understand, they've done the studies with the balloons, sending them up into the actual trails. And here's the bombshell, George. We've actually disclosed the chemtrail budget. This is at the intelhub.com, a great source on this and so many other topics. Secret presidential chemtrail budget uncovered Congress exceeds billions to spray the populace. And here's what it's called, George. It's called the Fund for Innovative Climate and Energy Research. And it, quote, exists to accelerate the innovative development and evaluation of science and technology to address carbon dioxide and other greenhouse emissions. Now, by now, I'm sure you've heard of the term geoengineering.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using this term geoengineering as, you know, this weather control. Now, what the motive is behind this, George, I don't know. But we can say that this is happening without necessarily having to get into the conspiracies. That's why people need to look at the science unto itself without necessarily getting involved with what the sinister plan is. You know, they should do the same with any topic, whether it's 9/11 and watching Building 7 falling down, or understanding fluoride and the problems with fluoride in our water supply.
I agree with you. You can look at the evidence without understanding the ultimate motive, but I can't help but ask that question about, and it becomes relevant when you say that you have the budget, you have information on the exact budget and the name of the program. And I'm wondering who knows about it then. I mean, Congress has to approve this budget. The president has to include it in his budget. Do they know what it is, or are they just rubber stamping this? At some point, somebody has to say, look, what the heck is this program over here? They're going through the budget with a fine-tooth comb. I don't know how many millions they're spending on this thing, but if all these chemtrails that we're seeing in the sky are in fact laced with something bad, it's costing a lot of money. It's a worldwide program. That's a heck of an undertaking for any government to pay for. Someone, it would seem to me, if it's a Bush program, that Obama says something about it. If it's an Obama program, that Congress says something about it. That's the missing piece for me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I couldn't agree more, but being that you're involved with the Black Ops and Area 51 and whatnot, you have to understand that this is compartmentalized and on a need-to-know basis, and it works.
Okay.
Under that fashion. And, you know, Dennis Kucinich, he had gotten involved with chemtrail legislation. There's people that know about this stuff, George, and it's getting out more and more. So, again, let me just quote this source from the intelhub.com. The major budget has been released to the public. So it's out in plain sight, as most things are. You know, this is something that you can look up and check out for yourself. This is in their own mouth. So it doesn't take us to, you know, to make a conspiracy theory here to show you what's going on. So,
well, Bob,
I appreciate your time.
Yeah, I appreciate the call. And like I said, I'm open, but I just have a lot of questions about it. We've had Clifford Carnicom on the program. I interviewed him. I thought he was a really interesting guy who seems to be doing his homework, you know, tracking this stuff down. Appreciate the call, Bob. We're going to Charles in Los Angeles. Hi, Charles.
Yes, good evening. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to comment on a couple of things. One, you mentioned a little while ago about the oil being depleted, but Pastor Lindsey Williams has been on Coast to Coast about three times that I've heard, and he says we have enough oil in Alaska alone to last over 200 years for this country of ours.
Yeah, I'd like a better source than a pastor, you know.
He sat in on all the meetings up there, the executive meetings, or most of them, not at the beginning, but later on. And he has a contact still that feeds him all the information going on up there.
But yeah, I've seen that stuff online. It get passed around about once a week. And, you know, and I don't say that he's full of baloney, but I just would like to have a better source, somebody that's directly involved in it, as opposed to somebody that sat in on a meeting. Did we lose Charles?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now.
Yeah, what we've heard also is that Kissinger went over to Saudi Arabia in the 70s and made a contract from between the Saudis and the United States, and agreed to take most all of their oil for us to produce very little, and in turn they would buy them in Federal Reserve notes and all that garbage, you know, and we would produce very little, but get most of our oil from them. That was an agreement that Kissinger made. We were told long, long time ago in the 70s.
Well, I wouldn't put it past them. I mean, there's a lot of gamesmanship played with oil. It seems like everybody, every time some Saudi sheikh stubs his toe, they've got to raise the prices. Or if there's a fire in a waste paper basket at an oil refinery somewhere, the prices have to go up worldwide. We all know that kind of stuff. And once they go up, it's pretty hard for them to go down. The industry rakes in a couple of extra $1 billion. Congress squawks and screams about it. And then it happens all over again. So I'm right there with you, Charles. I agree. But I would have to say that at some point, there has to, if we haven't passed it now, it has to come that we pass the peak of our world oil supply, unless you believe that it's being replenished all the time. And that's certainly a controversial area.
George Norrie does, too. also, this country is not controlled by Congress, basically. It's controlled by the Federal Reserve System. In 1933, after the Feds took over in 1913, in 1933, June the 5th, Roosevelt filed bankruptcy. It was House Joint Resolution 192 and turned the country over to the Federal Reserve System.
Well, we could do five or six shows on that, Charles, but we can't do it in a couple of minutes. I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. One more call before we go to the break. Russ in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Russ. Are you
morning.
There? Hey, good morning.
Yes,
how you doing?
I had a second opinion, too, on something else, but I'll do both of them. Very quickly, I don't know why anybody who's at the age of 55 or less is not filing charges against the federal government in regards to the Ponzi scheme called Social Security. These people are having money taken out of their paychecks and put into a system which they're never going to see. And very quickly, on the second subject, in 2008, in July, it was $145 a barrel for oil, which the national average was $4 a gallon. The average now is $4 a gallon, and the point of barrel is about $110. I'd like some questions answered on that.
Well, who would you like to put those questions to?
Well, I'd like to be the person to do the interviewing of the oil companies because I haven't sworn in. And I'll tell you how you work this very quickly. Going back to 2008, you asked why 35 years previous to it, 1973, since they're paying for more oil now, they're making a bigger profit. Which back in 1973, they didn't have blended oil or unleaded oil, unleaded gasoline. And that would be kind of an interesting thing to get that answer from.
I agree with you, Russ. I would also agree that the public has a right to be mad about Social Security. We're paying into something that who knows if it's still going to be around.
It's called Bernie Madoff, U.S. government.
I take it that you're still paying that in your paychecks?
Yeah, there's things out here that are being taken out that shouldn't be. And I'd like to see a lot more clarity on where this money's actually going. In fact, let me tell you one more quick thing. I'll be real brief. It is impossibly charged with counterfeiting money. And the reason why you go to the judge, when they want to get your counterfeiting money, you ask them, is this the instrument you're talking about? Yeah. You're charging my client with counterfeiting government money? Yeah. You ask them to read the very top line. It says Federal Reserve note. Say, Your Honor, it's very clear this instrument belongs to the Federal Reserve. Therefore, you cannot charge my client with counterfeiting government money because it's their money. The worst you could get would be possibly trademark or copyright infringement where there's no designation there.
Well, I'll tell you, that music tells us we need to go to the break. I'd be real careful before I was the one who tested that in court, Russ, but I appreciate the call. Thanks to all the callers, in fact. Coming up now in a couple of minutes, Paul Bannister, Confessions of a Tabloid Man. How about his new book, Tabloid Man and the Baffling Chair of Death, here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us.